Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
If you tuned into our podcast recently, you might have enjoyed an episode about sensory deprivation, about sensory deprivation tanks, about entering the womb-to-tomb wet box. Which you don't like that term, but
I take issue with wet box.
Yeah. It does sound kind of weird and a little gross. But entering this chamber of salty water and deprivated senses and experiencing something phenomenal.
Yeah, you go into the moist box. See, that's no better, is it?
It's no better.
And it really is sort of an amazing experience, simply because you're doing something. That's pretty elementary, right? You are taking out all that sort of stimuli that's surrounding you every day. And then you are trapped with your mind, which some of us feel sometimes like we are trapped within the box of our mind. So sort of like you're trapped within a box within a box.
I feel like in a way, when we're trapped in our own mind in our daily life, it's more like we are trapped in a party with one party guest that we desperately want to avoid, but they keep cornering us and talking at us. So it's right. Like we're in this party. There's lots of stuff around us. I got work to do. If I don't want to do my work for some reason, I've got things I'm reading. I can always look something up on the internet or do something on my to-do list.
Mm-hmm.
So there are all these people that I can interact with at this party, but this nagging voice in my mind keeps coming up and saying, hey, remember when you were in high school and, oh, you remember that thing you said to your friend last week and what are you going to do next week? You know, and so then you're like, oh, I'm cornered by this creep again, but then you go on. Whereas the sensory deprivation tank is kind of like saying, all right, you and this annoying party guest are going to spend some time together and you're going to figure out what doesn't work here.
And there's no cheese plate to escape to, right?
Right.
Like it's just you and you.
Yeah, you can't say you have to run, refresh your drink, or use the bathroom. You got to, like, fight it out.
Right. So we both underwent the sensory deprivation 60 minutes long. And I will say that for my first session, because I did two, I put a little hand towel in the door because I was not really all that interested in sealing myself into something because I wasn't quite sure if I was claustrophobic.
Now, did we describe the thing for them enough? Like essentially kind of like not as casket-like as I was hoping. And I imagine you were maybe fearing. But kind of, you know, like this big pod with kind of a squarish like back portion because it has like an auto cleaning and filtration system, and
it's about chest high.
Yeah.
So it was a lot higher than I thought it was going to be, which is good because you have more room to move around and get in and out, right? Mm-hmm. It's got a little hatch that opens and closes. And it's got a filtration system, very, very important for anybody who's not interested in soaking in someone else's body stuff.
Yeah. And the water itself is high salt content. I mean, mm-hmm. how many pounds was like
800 pounds of Epsom salt, right?
Yeah. So you're soaking in that, not just soaking it, floating on it because you float in water that's salty. And then the hatch is closed or partially closed.
Yeah.
And that cuts out most of the sound. Also, you're using waxy earplugs.
Yes.
Yeah. Like little bits of bubble gum that go in your ear. You're wearing those, so that's helping to deaden out the sound as well.
And keep the water out.
Your eyes are kept mostly, I mean, your eyes are kept above the water because you're floating
mm-hmm.
on your back. And then the hatch is closed or partially closed, thus obscuring light.
Right. And the water is heated to, I believe it's, 33 degrees Celsius, either 30 or 33, and 99 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, so the idea here is you're not like, ooh, this water's a little chilly, or, oh, this is so nice and warm, but more it's in keeping with your body. So the idea is that it blurs the line between where your flesh ends and the water begins.
Right, the borders are just supposed to fall away, and in some sense they certainly do that.
Yeah, except if you have a scratch on you or something, and then the salt water will let you know where your flesh ends and the water begins. And that's something they warn you about. There's like a tub of Vaseline on top of the tank that you're supposed to put on your cuts before you go in.
Mm-hmm.
If you ran through a thorn bush, you probably should skip going to the sensory deprivation tank that day until you're
or if you've just shaved.
Or you've just shaved, yeah.
And
even then, though, if you get like a little sting, because I went in there and I was not expecting that, and it stung a little bit, but then you sort of get used to it, and the feeling goes away.
Yeah, and I will say the first time I floated, a lot of the float was dealing with the limited stimuli that I had access to. In other words, you know, I have many more bug bites than I knew of because
yeah.
now this is stinging, and it's much more amplified
right.
because I have nothing else to concentrate on. There's also a particular smell to the water, and I'm attributing that to the Epsom salt.
Yeah, and also just sort of, I mean, it is essentially kind of a enclosed sort of hot tub type environment.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've ever owned a hot tub or frequently use a hot tub, you know there are certain smells associated with that. I'm talking about a functioning hot tub. I'm not talking like a funky, disease-ridden hot tub. But in other words, what I'm saying is that even though you're deprivating certain senses,
mm-hmm.
Your sense of smell is still going to be intact unless you plug up your nose, I guess. So you are going to get certain salty, hot tubby odors.
And this is all stuff for the mind to chew on while you are immersed in this water, right?
Yes.
Because, again, you have very limited stuff here to work with. So that doesn't mean that your entire float you would be, you know, sitting here being driven crazy by these different elements. It's just sort of easing into this process. And, of course, it is different for every single person who floats.
Yeah. Now, the feel of it. We should talk about next. I knew I was going to be floating, but I haven't really floated in anything like this before.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've never been to the Dead Sea or anything like that. So this was a first for me, and it was really kind of surprising because I climbed into it. And you don't think you have to climb into it naked, but it's implied that you should.
It is because, again, you become much more aware of what stimuli is there. So if you have a bathing suit on, then you're going to be aware
yeah.
of the elastic or whatnot.
And ultimately, it's more hygienic that way because I think I've talked about saunas a bit before. In the U.S., everyone's going into a sauna with some sort of bathing suit on, whereas in Europe, and you're going to encounter more of a nude trend in your saunas.
Mm-hmm.
And the nude trend is arguably far more sanitary because it's, you don't know where the bathing suits have been or how clean those are. People are bringing in these soggy, lower torso garments that have been soaking in water and whatever else. So, ultimately, I think that everyone going into the isolation tank naked is really better for everyone involved.
All right.
And you're taking a shower before and after as well.
Yeah, those are the rules.
Those are the rules. What was I talking about before we got on that rant? I was talking about the feeling. Yeah, so I climbed in, and then you kind of slip the last little bit. It's kind of like going into a torpedo tube.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly I'm just floating, and it's really weird sensation if you never felt it before.
Yeah, because you can't see anything. So we talked about this in the episode, I believe, about the quietest room in the world, that even just deprived of your auditory cues, you begin to lose your sense of where you are in time and space. So that's why people in the quietest room in the world at the Orrfield Labs, they have to sit down after 30 minutes because they don't really feel like they're pinned in space and time. Well, think of yourself in this tank floating naked and those borders of yourself melting away. And this is when people begin to feel as though they're spinning inside. And some people feel like they're spinning really, really fast, or they're just kind of cruising around. But it's a very odd feeling.
Well, I kept having this feeling, and this would happen sort of the more I was in there. I'm floating, and I'm floating essentially on a horizontal plane. But there's a little bobbing around, and occasionally your hand, your foot will touch the side. And then I would get this feeling as if the horizontal plane were tipping forward.
Mm-hmm.
But that I was staying in one place, and then kind of a feeling like I was shooting down a tube. So there's this like false feeling of movement as well. And it never felt woozy or anything. I didn't feel like I was going to be sick or like I was on a roller coaster exactly, but it was this feeling of movement that I knew wasn't actually happening.
Yeah, and how did your brain deal with that? You know, were you consumed by it, or?
I was kind of like thinking, whoa, I really feel like I'm moving. And I would picture myself in like a plane of darkness, and then being tipped forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then occasionally, and this is where I got into trouble a little bit, is that I would I feel myself tipping forward, so I tip my head back a little bit, presumably to keep my head above the water.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, since the water plane wasn't actually tilting, all I managed to do was get a little salt water in my eyes.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. All these little things, all this minutia, you begin to sort of get caught up with, and then your body becomes accepting of it eventually, mm-hmm. because it adapts. And I thought that was the fascinating part of all of this, is that here we are in just completely bombarded by everything, by all the little undercurrents of sound, of, you know, the state of our hunger, or, you know, if we're super hungry or not very hungry at all or not feeling great, the interactions with everybody, all the data we're taking in with our eyes. You shut all of that out, and the brain kind of goes a little bit, I'll say nuts, like light nuts, good nuts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then adapts to that. And you begin to feel that release into the water. And I think that is the key point that everybody has talked about anecdotally, is, you know, this is what the tank is really good for, is that you do have a release, and your brain and your body finally decide to just sort of submit to the experience. And things do get quiet. And I'm not going to say that I had a completely, you know, meditative state, you know, after 20 minutes. Who knows? Because time is non-existent in the tank.
Yeah. Like, basically, they tell you don't think about time, because a number of things will happen. You'll hear the filtration system kick in at the end. And then they'll make some music play in the room. And then if that doesn't work, they'll come and knock on the door.
Yeah.
So the idea is, don't worry about how close you are to the finish line. We'll tell you when your time is up.
Right. It's just sort of slipping in and out of different states. So that was, to me, one of the most interesting things. Altered states, which we talked about, is that the main thing that comes out of this experience is that people are having altered states of consciousness.
Now, we're talking about sound there. One of the impressions I definitely had is that I'm in there, I'm in my own head, and then time sort of starts to slip by.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly I'm hearing this noise, and it sounds like the crashing of waves on a beach. And then I realize that it's my own breathing,
mm-hmm.
because I have the plugs in, I'm in the water, and so most of the noises, I mean, pretty much all the noises I'm hearing is simply the noises of my body.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hearing my breathing. And that was a really interesting experience, because it did feel like waves crashing, sound like waves crashing.
I had that same experience, and I thought, wow, it sounds like I'm on the beach. And then same thing, I was startled to realize that it was just my own breath. And you can hear your heart beating.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, I decided that the towel in the door that just had the crack of light coming through was not good, because I would sort of go into the void of nothingness and be taken out when I floated near the top where that crack of light was.
And again, you left that there because you're maybe a little claustrophobic.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, I'd never been sealed into anything. I wasn't crazy about the idea, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, I'll just do that. And then I know that I have, you know, I can just push it open, which I could do anyway. But once I got past the fear of that, I wanted to take it out. But here's the thing. I started to lift my head maybe a couple of inches. Mm-hmm. And I was so incredibly heavy and so shocked by that that I just said, never mind, because it felt like my neck weighed 1,000 pounds.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized the extent to which my body had just become entirely relaxed, as well as my mind.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to enter one of the more obvious realms of the senses here that is being taken away from us in the tank. We're going to talk about sight, and we're going to talk about darkness. And then after that, we're also going to try and catch up on a little listener mail. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, Well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, we're back, and now it's time to talk about the darkness and talk about
the darkness.
What about our encounters with the darkness inside of the tank?
All right, so are you talking about hallucinations?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, the first time I really, like I said, it was sort of a struggle between being present and letting myself go and being preoccupied with what was going on with my body or, you know, my stomach gurgling. But I did see a crusty eyeball staring at me.
Whoa.
Which I wasn't...
Describe crusty.
Crusty is sort of, well...
It's like sleep crusty, dust?
Sort of like opaque-looking eyeball that just looked crusty and old.
Hmm.
And I wasn't... I mean, I wasn't thrilled with that. I wasn't scared by it. But no, it was just sort of, like I said, opaque-looking.
Okay.
And so that was the extent of that. But the second time I floated, by the way, it just... When I went back in... It's amazing how your brain just maps all this stuff out and is ready for the experience. The smell, everything, the water temperature, none of this was a surprise to me. So I was able to get into that altered state much quicker. And the second time, I just sort of saw a bunch of very odd things, like as if I were a lizard crawling up a rock and seeing my little lizard arms crawling up. Well, those sorts of things. And not to mention having just a lot of very interesting thoughts about either how I operate in the world or things I've experienced.
Hmm.
I wouldn't call them revelations, but things that were sort of important that I needed to maybe acknowledge or discuss with myself.
Yeah.
And I had trapped myself in a box to do so.
Yeah, you're taking that person that corners you at the party, you're trapping them in the box with you, and then you may think to realize, I should maybe ask them about their job. Maybe I should...
right.
Or maybe we have some or unresolved issue I should talk about with this part of myself.
And it was really interesting because, as you say, there are so many things that we can occupy our brains with,
mm-hmm.
you know, with trying to escape that person at the party, that when you are in that space and it's just you and you, then it becomes like, well, this is very important. And those sort of things do rise to the surface and you do have to deal with them, albeit in a good way. I don't mean to say that, you know, there's any sort of strife associated with this.
Hmm. Now, when you were picturing yourself as a lizard and some more things, were these colorful in any way? Were they like...
No, it was more like desert colors.
Okay.
Does that make sense? It's like more sort of fitting in with the terrain that I was scaling.
Okay, cool.
You?
Oh, well, with me, I basically, you know, I go into the tank and it's all dark and your eyes kind of adjust to it, you know, sort of dancing lights a little bit, you know, at first. And after a while, I'd been in there and I'd had the experience hearing the ocean. And then I was observing some light. And at first I thought that light was leaking in through the tank. And my first thought was, well, this is kind of a crappy sensory deprivation tank because there's all this light leaking into it, or somebody has come into the room and opened a window or something, or something's ajar. And then I quickly realized that this was not actual light. I was seeing light.
Mm-hmm.
I was seeing this kind of gray light as if it were leaking in to the tank, though it wasn't actually illuminating anything. Like, I couldn't see my body or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I was just seeing light, specifically at the edges of my sight. And as I sort of watched the light some more, I saw like a human skull, like a gray light, made of the same gray light that I was receiving. A human skull made of this, rotating. And, of course, if you know me, then you know it probably doesn't take much for me to think or imagine a skull, so I don't know. But at any rate,
say hello, dear Horatio.
No, I did not speak to it. But I saw it rotating there, and then that kind of went away, and I saw like a whole bunch of, like gray sea anemone mm-hmm. tentacles of the, like, well, they're not really tentacles. Are they tentacles? I'm not up on my sea anemone anatomy.
No, I don't believe they are.
But,
well, I mean, maybe they are, but they don't remind me of tentacles
yeah.
because they're thinner, right?
Yeah, it's those appendages that they have.
Right.
So they were kind of dancing there, just kind of undulating as if in a sea current. And they were also composed of that same sort of gray light, almost kind of an ectoplasmy substance as the skull. And then that kind of faded away, and I didn't have any more visual hallucinations for the remainder of the episode.
I have to share with you that the first time that I floated, I did find myself at one point giggling just crazy giggling. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of like afterward afraid of, well, I wonder if they heard me in the other room. But the reason I was giggling is because they were things that I started to think about that seemed so important that I was stressed out about, that in the light of that experience, mm-hmm. It became hilarious.
Huh.
And I will say that after my second float, a couple hours after that, my husband was, we were talking about something, fixing dinner, and he started stressing out about something, and I started laughing again at him because he was stressed out. I was still in this state, and he was like, oh. He was like, seriously, is this how you're going to be all night? So I will say that the second time I really felt like the after effects of that were much more pronounced, that I was viewing the world a little bit more outside of myself. And not trying to make my husband feel bad by laughing at him, but it was funny.
Time was really strange in the tank, because when I first got in, you know, everything was sort of new and I'm taking it in, and then nothing was really happening. And I started thinking, ooh, I'm going to be in here an hour. I actually started thinking, what if I just how badly would the lady at the front judge me if I left after 15 minutes? You know, how much of a square would I appear to be if that was my story? I sat there for 15 minutes, so I just got wet, so I just left, you know. But then I stayed there longer, and eventually I did lose complete track of time. So when the filtration system finally kicked in and the music came on, mm-hmm. I was really shocked. I was like, wow, I can't believe an hour's passed.
Yeah, it was interesting to talk to Marilyn. She's the person at the Harmony Wellness and Yoga Center.
Mm-hmm. In Tucker, Georgia.
In Tucker, Georgia. And she was saying that, she says the tank is the teacher, which, by the way, the tank is made by Samadhi. Which is this samadhi and is this idea of being the tool of meditation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Samadhi, the company, John C. Lilly, actually helped to develop this current iteration of the tank, by the way.
Cool.
So we were in a John C. Lilly approved tank.
Awesome.
But anyway, she was saying that the tank is essentially the teacher, and that she said that there was one person who got out after 15 minutes. And he said that he kept spinning and spinning and spinning, or felt like he was spinning uncontrollably. He realized that his mind was so disordered and was always spinning, and he couldn't stop it. And so he decided that he would get out. And she said, you know, even though he just had a 15-minute experience, he sort of had the breakthrough of realizing that his life was in such disorder because of his mind. So she was saying, you know, there's something to be learned from every single moment that you're in there. But that being said, as you said, you just don't really realize time is passing, or you do and you're trying to tag it, but the brain isn't quite letting you. And so I thought it would be interesting just to drop in that there was some research by neurophysiologists and chemists who were working on time processing, and they showed how emotions can speed up or slow down our perception of time. In our last episode, you actually touched on this too, about how emotion can color time perception. In 2011, Professor Droit Vollette and Sandrine Gill published a study on emotional states, and they did this by having their volunteers watch films and seeing how that affected their sense of time. So these students, these volunteers, were looking at films like horror movies like The Blair Witch Project, Scream, and The Shining. And then they looked at film, really sad films like City of Angels, Philadelphia, Dangerous Minds. That's what they say is a sad movie. A third category was neutral footage. So weather forecasts, stock market updates. Some people could think that was sad, by the way. And then they asked the students to estimate the duration of a visual stimulus, like how long they were looking at this or experiencing this. And they found that fear distorted time and the stimulus being perceived was much longer than it actually was. And that fear prompted a state of arousal that speeded up the rate of the internal clock. And the state also involved dilated pupils, higher pulse rate, increased blood pressure, you know, all the known quantities.
So in the fearful situation, it seemed to last longer than it actually was.
Isn't it interesting, though, because we always think about fear, something fearful happening, it like happened just in a split second. But we also know that when you feel like you're under attack, that things do slow down. They seem to slow down because you're trying to take in every single element of what you're experiencing, which is why your pupils dilate, right?
Huh. Well, that reminds me of, like, recently I was looking up a clip from The Ring, the American remake.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking up the scene where Samara, the ghost slash entity emerges from the television set. And I was surprised at how short that segment was when I saw it, you know, on a YouTube clip as being, and I forget how long it was, but, you know, you saw the clear time stamp of when it began and when it ended. And I was like, wow, that really felt like a much longer scene when I saw it the first time.
Right. So because you were, as we know, with our mirror neurons, it's sort of in empathy going through the experience, right? And things felt sort of drawn out. Now they found out that sadness does not affect our perception of time, and they thought that it would slow it down or speed it up. And they feel like the emotion that was felt while watching the film wasn't strong enough to slow down physiological functions. Now, that does not mean that severe depression is not affected in this way. They were taking people who were, quote-unquote, healthy volunteers who didn't have any depression problems and sort of measuring it that way. That doesn't mean that, you know, people who do suffer from severe depression don't experience time dilation, right? Anyway, so I thought this was just sort of interesting information to add when we're talking about taking all that stimuli out in the tank and trying to gauge time.
Well, it's kind of like in Dungeons and Dragons, where you have like a sword and it does a certain amount of base damage, but then if it's magical, then it'll have like a modifier of a +3 or a +2. But then if the individual is in a stressful situation or he's cursed or something, you have maybe a modifier of a -1, and all of that adds up to what the sword's actual power is. So in a sense, when you go into a tank like this, you are removing some of the modifiers on your appreciation of time and your experience of time, the things that make it speed up and the things that slow it down.
Well, you know, we've talked so much about the default mode network and this idea that this is the center of the ego in the self, and that's where all this chatter happens. And when we have excessive chatter, this leads to depression, right? Because you get sort of caught up in this sort of I-ness of the experience. So it's kind of funny. You would think that if you put yourself in the tank, that this default mode network might go crazy, right? And be like, oh, this is the opportunity just to really focus on the self, but
because
the opposite happens.
As we discussed before, sensory deprivation is used as a mode of an enhanced interrogation or light torture. So there is definitely a dark side to it. So you could see where you would enter the situation thinking, well, I'm going to go crazy in there and turn into a Neanderthal. But it didn't happen to us, and it doesn't happen to most people.
Yeah, I don't think so.
So, yeah, in the end, I know you went once, and you went the second time and found it even more amazing, and you have, two more scheduled?
I do,
to continue the journey?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool, because when I left, she was telling me, the no float is like the next, or the one before it, each one's different, and to really understand it, you need to come back for a second one, which, you know, part of that, I'm thinking, well, of course you want me to come back for a second one, because I have to pay for it. And obviously you want to encourage, it's a business, you want people to come back in and be a repeat listener. But from your experience, it sounds like that is definitely the case. And it makes sense, because the first time you're in there, you're just experiencing the tank for the first time. And the next time you can focus less on the tank and more on the experience.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, and Marilyn was saying that there's a recovery group that she works with that also uses the tank, and it's very effective. And I thought about that afterward, and I thought I can completely see that being very therapeutic, because you are in a space where you have to confront the way that your mind is working, mm-hmm. and not just working, but some of the falsities that we tend to wrap ourselves in.
Yeah,
you know, there's no escaping that.
Go sit in the corner and think about what you've done, kind of.
A little bit. In fact, I have a quote here that I thought that I would read that pairs up with this pretty nicely. And this is a sutra from the ancient Sanskrit text called the Vijnan Bhairava Tantra. And Vijnana means wisdom and insight, perception that is free of thought. And Bhairava means the fearsome form of Shiva, in this case,
yes.
Consciousness, which destroys ignorance and mental conditioning. I've also seen this translated as the joy and terror of realizing oneness with the soul. The text is thought to date back to 800 AD, and it's a collection of 112 meditation techniques using the senses as a point of departure. So it seemed pretty fitting to cap this section off with. The quote is, "Attend to the skin as a subtle boundary containing vastness. Enter that shimmering and pulsing vastness. Discover that you are not separate from anything there. And there is no other, no object to meditate upon that is not you."
That's nice. All right. Well, on that note, let us call over the robot so that we may catch up on a little listener mail. All right. This one comes to us from Marta. Not to be confused with our transportation system, public transportation system here in Atlanta, but Marta as in a person. Marta writes in and says, "Hey guys, I just finished listening to your Eaten Alive podcast, and I can't avoid thinking about the book I recently listened to by Christopher Moore, Fluke, or I Know Why the Winged Whale Sings. It's an amazingly funny tale of a biologist who is actually eaten alive whole by a whale, and that's just the start. It's fantasy mixed with real science and environmental questions, all wrapped up in smart humor. I totally recommend it to you." Have you ever read anything by Christopher Moore?
I have not.
Christopher Moore, I can personally vouch, is a fine author and well worth reading. I've read a book he wrote called Lamb, mm-hmm. which is a fictional, humorous at times, but also surprisingly poignant account of the life of Jesus, the lost years, where he goes on adventures and he has this. It's told by his friend. His friend was Biff.
The lost years.
Yeah. So okay. He has this kind of. He has his friend Biff who's talking about his travels with Jesus, and they end up.
Biff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they travel to India, and they fight a demon at one point. So they go on adventures. It's a fun book, but also it's not one where it's like, let's just have some stupid adventures with Jesus and make fun of somebody's faith or something. Like it's a really poignant book as well as a hilarious one. And then he also wrote one called Fool, which is kind of a medieval Shakespearean story that brings in elements of a few different Shakespeare plays, but it's told from the point of view of a fool. And that one's just a lot of fun, especially for any Shakespeare buffs out there. I highly recommend that one. So anyway, Marta continues. She says, "Just to close, I didn't write in at the time regarding the Leprechauns podcast and the migraines that can cause visual delusions, but I was amazed by the exact description you made of whole scenes I read in Haruki Murakami's tales, particularly the small creatures coming out of the TV. It's kind of a recurrent theme in his writing, and I was surprised to find out it might be because he suffers from migraines. Thanks for so much fantastic work, Marta from Portugal."
All right. Very cool. Speaking of books, I wanted to interject that I am in the middle of reading the Hitman's Guide to House Cleaning.
Oh, cool.
If anybody has picked that up and you are shocked by the language, I apologize. If anybody has picked it up and they are sort of delighted by how crazy Pulp Fiction-y crime this is, then I hope you're enjoying it. I have to say that I'm struggling between both of those hemispheres.
All right, well, here's our next one. This one is from Eric, frequent contributor to the listener mail section. He says, he's responding to our ventriloquism episode. He says, "When I was 7 or 8, I was interested in ventriloquism. My parents got me a dummy, and I started learning the art. I was having fun until, while watching The Twilight Zone, I saw the dummy." The episode titled The Dummy. "It scared the ever-living blank out of me. What made it so bad was my dummy looked exactly the same as the one on the show. So I had nightmares for weeks after, and it still creeps me out like crazy. Many years later, I saw the episode again with my mother. I told her how much this episode scared me, especially because I had a dummy like the one in the episode. She told me she wondered why she had found my dummy under my bed with its arms, legs, and head torn off. Killing and dismembering my own dummy also led to nightmares where it tried to take revenge on me. Love this episode. Thanks."
Wow. I mean, we talked a lot about the relationship of the puppeteer and the puppet.
Yeah.
And how you feel there's some sort of like a, like loyalty to it or disloyalty in this case. So it's interesting to hear that.
And also interesting to learn that Eric has committed ventriloquicide?
Puppeticide.
Yeah, he killed a puppet, but it's quite a little story you created in our head there.
Yeah, I don't judge. I have to say, if same thing had happened to me at that tender age, I might do the same.
Well, these stories, be it a horror movie or horror show, you watch them at too young an age, and something creepy happens with something in the real world, it can freak you out. Like I remember watching Poltergeist at way too young an age. And there's that whole scene where like weird starts happening in the mm-hmm. night, and then the door opens, and there's also the
tree branches.
Yeah, the
tapping.
Tree branch tapping. So like for ages, like the idea of a tree branch tapping against my window, that was horrifying.
Yeah.
And I think there's a weird puppet, like a kind of a Harlequin looking puppet in there as well.
And a clown, I believe.
Yeah.
Yep.
Speaking of clowns and Harlequins, I wanted to point out in the past we've talked about clowns a bit and about scary clowns, and we've never done an episode on clowning traditions, though Pop Stuff did one where they mm-hmm. go into a lot of the history. I mean, it gets really interesting. You know, you look at various Native American traditions and just how important the clown or the fool or the harlequin is. I'm currently reading a horror short story by Thomas Ligotti called The Last Feast of Harlequin. And so far, it's pretty creepy because there's a an anthropologist who's investigating a like a Lovecraftian northeastern town that has some sort of rich and possibly grotesque Harlequin tradition. But he's real excited about going because he also partakes in clowning himself and is into juggling. And so I don't know where it's going to go, but it's probably going
to
scare me.
What's the grotesque part? I have to wonder. What's the grotesque?
Well, there's...
Like grotesquerie, meaning like exaggeration or like disgusting?
Well, I'm not sure because at this point in the story, I haven't finished it yet, but there's some sort of weird Harlequin type of ceremony that goes on. So some sort of clowning going about, but then also some sort of belief system that is really heavy on the cyclical idea that maybe we begin as worms and we end as worms. So there's bound to be something kind of corpsey in there. I don't know. I'm not that familiar with this author yet, so it's all kind of new to
me. Yeah, well, now I'm intrigued.
All right, here's another one about our ventriloquism episode. This one comes from David. David writes in and says, "Hi, happened to come across your ventriloquism cast and loved it. I was especially interested in the tethered to an object idea, which goes well beyond ventriloquism. You might be interested in my book in the Routledge series, Critical Voices in Art, Theory, and Culture. The book is Art and Ventriloquism, and is really a way of showcasing ventriloquism as a metaphor and performance act in many aspects of philosophers, like Nietzsche, Foucault, Plato, Derrida, and in many philosophical areas, but especially aesthetics. By unpacking the metaphor, I mean several of the things you two spoke about, such as speaking in other voices, the Greek notion of ecstasis, of being beside oneself, illusion without deception, the animation of inanimate objects, and so forth. I'm sure you are busy with the next podcast, but if you chance to check out the book, do so. Thanks for the cast. We'll be sure to listen regularly. Best, David." And since David's an author, let me go ahead and give you his name so you can look that up if that interests you. That's David Goldblatt. So that's DavidGoldblatt. And that again is the Routledge series, Critical Voices in Art, Theory, and Culture. And the book is Art and Ventriloquism. So that sounds interesting. I'm going to have to seek that out myself. And that would probably interest some of our listeners as well.
That sounds really cool. I actually wrote a paper, a Derrida paper, and I think it was, I won't be able to remember the content so well, but I believe the title was Dwelling in the Tomb of A. So if there's anybody out there who has studied Derrida, you know probably a sense of what I'm talking about there, but I can't help but sort of laughing about that title now. All right, we also heard from Fran, and she contacted us about our episode on Finnish education. She wanted to point out that we referred to Finland as a Scandinavian country and that we should not have. She is correct. We should have referred to it more in the general sense as a Nordic country, so I wanted to say that. She also said that she wanted to take some issue with us referring to Finland as a becoming independent from Russia in the 60s. And I just wanted to point out that we did not say that Finland became independent from Russia in the 60s. What we said is that they came out of the cocoon of influence from Russia in the 60s.
Okie doke. Well, let's look at one last bit of listener mail. And this one comes to us from Brian. Brian writes in and says, "Hey guys, I just listened to your Cat Parasite episode, and one of the listener emails about your Art Freakout episode made me take notice. You proposed that maybe people in Italy had a strip mall syndrome." In this, we were talking about how Americans that live in strip mall country travel to, say, Italy, go to one of the amazing museums there or see some of the historical sites, and it's just too much. You end up getting the Stendhal syndrome where it just overpowers you and maybe you pass out.
Right. So someone from Rome, for instance, who is just surrounded by all this antiquity, if they were to go to a strip mall in America, what would happen?
Yeah. So Brian says, "I have had a version of this. I've lived in several cities in Europe and the U.S., but the only big reaction I remember from culture shock came when I moved back home to the Twin Cities after living in New York City for a few years. Grocery stores, any stores really, are diminutive in New York City because space is very expensive. This isn't true in the cities. The first time I went to a large grocery store, I had a freak out. The scale of the place, the ceiling so high they could contain their own weather patterns, the 40 types of yellow mustard, not to mention brown, etc., and the terrible use of space. My wife had to steer the cart as I fought hyperventilating. This hasn't happened since, but I can remember the sensation viscerally. I'm going to have to go back and listen to the whole episode. Thanks for some great content. Cheers, Brian."
I think he brings up a really good point, because I've been in cities for a while that had smaller grocery stores, and I know exactly what it means. I'm thinking about Star Market in Boston, Star Market. And then coming back to Atlanta and then being in these big box retailers, and it is sort of disorienting to be in this huge hall of consumerism.
Yeah. I mean, even here in Atlanta, where we have plenty of big stores and a lot of sprawl, I tend to not go to Walmart a lot. But so when I do, it is always a bit of insanity because it's so big and there's just so much stuff and there's just vast distances. Like, oh, the grocery item I need is on the other side of the store. It's time for an enormous walk. And, you know, then it's their idea of a quick checkout is like 50 items or less or something. But anyway, it's a whole rant.
Yeah. And, you know, there's this other thing to compound it, which is Sam's or Costco, right? You can go down an aisle and you can see the largest jar of peanut butter that you've ever seen in your life that's bigger than your head.
Mm-hmm.
And just jars and jars of them. And it's sort of like being like Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Hey, if any of you have something you would like to share with us about giant jars of peanut butter in Wonderland or about Stendhal syndrome at the strip mall, about sensory deprivation. This episode, we ended up putting this out. Actually, we ended up recording this the day after our initial episode aired, so it didn't really leave any time for you guys and girls to respond with your own stories of sensory deprivation. So feel free to send those in, because we'll still hopefully read those in future episodes. You can find us in a number of ways to interact with us, to catch up on past episodes and see what we're up to. Our mothership is Stuff to Blow Your Mind. That's where our blogs are. That's where everything that we do winds up there one way or another. And that is stufftoblowyourmind.com. And you can also find us on various social media networks. You can find us on Facebook is Stuff to Blow Your Mind, on Tumblr is Stuff to Blow Your Mind, on Twitter we are Blow the Mind, and on YouTube we are Mind Stuff Show.
And you can always send us a line at blowthemind@discovery.com. For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.